Dr. Filmich, I can hear you very clearly.
I apologize for the delay. We had an expert on economics who explained to us what this Great Reset is most likely going to do to our, not just our German economy, but to the world's economies. But I'm really glad you're with us. You're a medical doctor, right?
Yes.
And what is the situation in Kenya?
As regards COVID?
Yeah. And of course, the economy.
Well, currently we are going through our fourth wave, and it's been very difficult. It has been the lockdown was lifted, but we have a curfew that starts at 10 p.m. until 4 in the morning, and people are still being encouraged to work from home. Those who can. And only those who can are then allowed to go to work. But we have a big problem in that the treatment option is completely ignored by the government, is not being spoken about, and there is no money being given towards the treatment option. Everything is about vaccination and waiting for vaccines. There's been a shortage of those vaccines, and we're very grateful to God about that. Now we got a letter that the civil servants, all the civil servants must be vaccinated by the 23rd of this month. And this is on the ground that some vaccines have come into the country from the UK and other areas. And towards the end of this month of August, we're expecting about 13 million doses of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. And I'm sure when those come in, the pressure would be even worse. I'm getting phone calls from people who are working in the private sectors, in NGOs, all of them being encouraged or coerced to receive the vaccination. So it's not a very nice place to be right now.
Let me translate this, but I'm sorry to not really have introduced you, because I have very little information. I know that you are also a member of a Union of Catholic Doctors. I know you're the Association of Catholic Doctors of Kenya, I think that's the name of it. But can you please explain to our audience and our viewers what your background is? I know you're much more than just a doctor.
Yes, well, I qualified as a medical doctor 30 years ago, and I've been practicing as a specialist for another 20. I've specialized in obstetrics and gynecology. So I look after pregnant women and their babies. I am a member of the Kenya Catholic Doctors Association. I'm actually the current chair. And we have done a lot of work, especially in stemming human rights abuse, using the medical platforms. We've done a lot of work on pushing back on the abortion, and we're also doing a lot of work. We did a lot of work against the fertility regulating tetanus vaccines that were brought into this country in 2013 by WHO, and that's where really most of the prominence comes from. We were involved with the help of some very good friends from the U.S., particularly Professor Ola, to put together the issues about that tetanus vaccine fiasco in a paper called HCG Found in WHO Tetanus Vaccines in Kenya Raises Concern in Developing Countries. In that paper, the main thing, what we were able to do is basically clearly demonstrate to the world that the eugenic agenda is still real. That there are still people out there who believe they are more important than others, and other people who are lesser than them, and that those who are considered unfit can be eliminated, and their population controlled by force. were also able to demonstrate that WHO and some elements of the UN and the Gavi networks have used deception and have disregarded human rights in toto, where they were giving our women fertility-regulating tetanus vaccine, purporting it to be the normal tetanus vaccine. And then that vaccination should be considered by any country as a national security issue. That we are dealing with the medication that is being given to people who are completely healthy, and you put them at risk. And if you're not careful what you give your people, you can actually destroy a whole community by just simply accepting a vaccine without inquiring its value or what it contains therein. So that, I think, in as far as this matter is concerned, would be appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Allow me to translate, please. Dr. Wahomin Gade ist nicht einfach nur irgendein Arzt, sondern er ist in einer Vereinigung katholischer Ärzte. Er hat einen Bericht geschrieben über die angeblichen Tetanusimpfungen, die in 2013 durch die WHO und die Gavi-connecteden Unternehmen durchgeführt wurde, weil es waren gar keine Tetanusimpfungen, sondern es waren in Wahrheit verkappte Sterilisierungsmaßnahmen. Er sagt, wir haben es auch heute noch. Ach so, spezialisiert ist er auf Geburtshilfe und Gynäkologie. Das ist auch der Grund, warum er da diesen Report schreiben konnte, weil er als Fachmann in dem Bereich genau erkennen konnte, was los ist. Was die Covid- oder Corona-Erkrankungen in Anführungsstrichen angeht, Covid-Erkrankungen angeht, das spricht er oder spricht das Land von der vierten Welle. Der Lockdown ist zwar aufgehoben worden, aber es gibt immer noch eine Ausgangssperre, die um 10 Uhr abends beginnt und um 4 Uhr morgens beendet ist. Die meisten Menschen müssen im Homeoffice arbeiten. Alle alternativen Behandlungsmethoden, über die wir schon gesprochen haben, Vitamin D, C, Ivermectin und so weiter, werden ignoriert, beziehungsweise es wird so getan, als seien nur die Impfungen überhaupt eine Möglichkeit, um hier wieder rauszukommen. Er sagt, glücklicherweise hat es bisher eine Shortage dieser Impfungen gegeben, also es gab zu wenige. Trotzdem sollen alle Beamten bis zum 31. August dieses Monats geimpft werden. Angeblich sind 13 Millionen Dosen von Johnson & Johnson da, die auch verimpft werden sollen. Es wird mit sehr viel Zwang, mit Coercion gearbeitet. Und dann hat er nochmal eben auf meine Frage hin sich dazu ausgelassen, was da bei dieser Tetanusimpfung in 2013 passiert ist. Das hat ihnen quasi die Augen geöffnet, denn das dahinterliegende Gedankenwerk wird bestimmt aus seiner Sicht von Eugenik. Diese Agenda ist immer noch sehr real, sagt er. Die Menschen, die allen Ernstes glauben, sie seien besser als andere und sie könnten darüber entscheiden, welche Menschen vom Planeten zu verschwinden haben und wer nicht, das sind eben diese Eugeniker. Denen geht es um Population Control. Dazu gehört das Gavi-Netzwerk, dazu gehört die WHO, die diese angebliche Tetanus-Impfung damals gepusht hatte. Er sagt, gerade weil solche Impfungen so missbraucht werden, sollte das ein nationales Sicherheitsproblem werden, sodass man nur noch mit äußerster Vorsicht überhaupt an die Impfung rangeht. Has this become the tetanus fraud, which it really is, because it wasn't about tetanus, it was about sterilization. Has this become an issue with the courts of law in Kenya?
Well, when we pushed back against it and the Catholic Church added its voice, sometime in 2017, WHO sneaked into the country and declared Kenya tetanus free. So they abandoned the program. So we don't have it anymore.
Can I ask you, could you give us a little bit more information how this whole fraud surfaced, how you got aware that this was not a normal tetanus vaccination but had these side effects? And were they permanent on the women who got vaccinated?
Well, the suspicion basically arises from the fact that we knew that the tetanus fertility regulating vaccine had been used in South America in 1993-94, specifically in Mexico, Nicaragua, and one other country I can't quite remember. And the way it was given and the fact that the church had complained that there was sterilization going on made us alert here in Kenya. And the first time WHO tried to introduce that program was in 1995. By that time, they were challenged again through the Catholic Doctors Association and the church. And the issue was, let us test the vaccine and make sure it doesn't have HCG. And they declined. They declined to have it tested, and they withdrew the program. They didn't come back until 2013. And in 2013, towards the end of the year, they gave the first shot of the tetanus vaccine. Then in March, they came again about 6 months later and were going to give the second round of vaccination. And that's when really the trigger was, that's not how we give tetanus vaccine. So two things. One, it was to be given to women in reproductive age, which meant from age 14 all the way up to 49, whether pregnant or not. And number two, it was to be given in cycles of every 6 months. Now, we know that every 6 months schedule is what was given for the tetanus, the fertility regulating tetanus. And it is also very telling that it was only women of reproductive age that were going to be included in this campaign. They said it's because of preventing neonatal tetanus. Now, in the country, we already have a tetanus vaccination program for pregnant women. And every pregnant woman is given two injections of the tetanus vaccine, which protects them for between 1 to 3 years to prevent neonatal tetanus. So when you come into the country and they say that now they want to inject everyone from teenagers all the way to 49 years, women who are not pregnant, they want to do it in cycles of every 3 months, then with the historical background, it was very important to check and see whether this was the fertility regulating vaccine or the normal vaccine, the normal tetanus. And you know, that's when we sought for the vials and tested them and found that they actually contained HCG.
And the HCG, could that have, that it's not possible that that would have been like, you know, a natural whatever component that comes from the production process, but that's clear that it was added on purpose, yeah?
Yes, there is no way in the tetanus production, the tetanus vaccine production, where you need HCG. And then the other thing is that even when we did the HPLC tests, it was clear that the HCG was bound or linked to the tetanus. So it wasn't anything added. You know, it's not like you could add it. We also know that medically, if you inject a woman who's not pregnant with HCG, you cause multiple ovulation. So it wouldn't make sense to add HCG to a tetanus vaccine, because then what you do is have a woman produce more eggs than she should have. But when you link it, to the tetanus in a bond that is engineered, then what that happens is that the woman produces antibodies against both tetanus and HCG, in which case then her body would produce anti-HCG antibodies. And that would have a devastating effect on early pregnancy.
It's absolutely criminal.
Mm, yes, it is.
Why? I mean, we have spoken to a colleague from India. She explained to us that something very similar happened in India in, I think, around the same time. I'm going to have to look it up, but I think it was around the same time. They were pretending to give young girls from, I think, ages 8 through 12 or so, certain shots, vaccines. I forget what it was for. And it turned out that, of course, they were totally misinformed because it was not a tested vaccine. Rather, the tests were ongoing on this unsuspecting population. It was from rural parts of the country, from tribes, as she explained to us. Many of the parents were destitute. They don't have enough money. They took the children and I think they put them in special, I should call them schools or whatever, but they were away from their parents. And then it turned out that I think either three or more children died. They took them to court. They're about, and this decision was confirmed by the India Supreme Court. They have a functioning legal system, as it turned out, and they declared that, yes, you're going to have to go after the people who are responsible for this. That, again, was an NGO, one of Bill Gates's NGOs. But in that, it hasn't come to that point yet in Kenya, or has it?
Well, one of the background issues is that most of the studies that were done have been done against about the tetanus fertility regulating vaccine were conducted in India by a gentleman called Talwal. And those vaccines were produced by the Serum Institute of India, which is the same one that is producing the COVID vaccines that are being distributed in India and in Africa. The thing we have here in Kenya is that we're beginning to see a lot of unexplained pregnancy losses. Now, when you interview some of these women, some of them were vaccinated against tetanus, some were not. So we are not very sure whether there is a clear link. But we are getting a lot of blighted ovums. We are getting a lot of threatened abortions. We are getting a lot of miscarriages. Something that I hadn't seen in a long, long time. The last maybe 5 or 7 years have been very, very, very unique in that sense. We have wanted to do a study because if we could demonstrate that there are actually antibodies against HCG in our women who are losing pregnancies, we'd have a very clear case that would quickly tie up with what we had investigated previously. The challenge has been to get an organization that would agree to produce the ELISA test kit. It's not difficult to do it technically, but majority of the companies that would do this are either licensed or closely supervised by WHO. And therefore, they are very worried about the loss of business, especially at international level. So if we could get an organization that would be willing to produce for us ELISA test kits that would do the reverse of what the pregnancy test does. So instead of looking for the HCG, it looks for the HCG antibodies. It technically is just a simple reversal. That would really be wonderful because we have resources available. We would have would be able to go through one of the universities and get ethical approval. But the key here would be that we would need a test kit that is beyond reproach. That is made by an organization that is willing to stand by it. And then when we demonstrate the presence of these antibodies, they can make the same kit for anybody in the world who would be willing to try and repeat the test. And that, yes. You know, so that would really be wonderful. This part of your video clip would probably not be good for public consumption because it would undermine anything that we'd be able to do. But that is really what we are lacking. If we could just get an organization that would develop that ELISA kit, we would do tests. And if we are able to demonstrate the anti-HCG antibodies, then we'll have a very tight case and we can go to court.
So we had Mike Yeadon and I, we had had another argument which might lead to infertility with a vaccination practice now. It's that the spike proteins have similar sequences as sensitin in some sequences. So even if there are antibodies, there might be antibodies against sensitin too, which would lead to infertility too. So if you make an ELISA, it would be good to think of that in addition to the HCG. Just a remark.
Yes, here, unfortunately, we in the country we don't have anybody with the technical capacity to produce the ELISA test kits.
So we would need someone from outside of Kenya to provide the country or your organization with these ELISA test kits.
Yes, that's the only thing that is lacking.
Okay.
But Rainer, let's talk to our network. I mean, maybe there's an option, because I think that's very interesting. I mean, that we should we need some kind of pharmaceutical company, you know, to cater to our own needs. Mm-hmm. So we get independent also on that side.
The interesting thing is that we have been able to develop a system of treatment that would be able to counter that, so that we're able to get any woman who has multiple losses, we're able to reverse that. There is a treatment protocol we are using. Again, it is based on anecdotal evidence. So it's not, you know, we haven't been able to publish. We need to do the study first, then demonstrate how the reversal can be done, but it's possible.
Well, I'm sure we're going to get very positive reactions from many of our viewers who will be able to come up with an idea of how to provide the country with these ELISA test kits. And I'm also sure once that is done, I will at least be able to connect with many Anglo-American lawyers who will be more than happy to go after WHO and Gavi and everyone else who is...
That would be beautiful.
Okay. Übersetzt du noch einmal, dann müssen wir mit dem Herrn Brucker sprechen.
Also, die Tetanus-Impfung, die keine waren, sondern offenbar der Sterilisierung dienten, die wurden 2017, also ich hatte gefragt, können wir da nicht, geht da denn niemand irgendwie gerichtlich vor? Nee, sagt er bisher nicht. Diese Tetanus-Impfung wurden dann auch beendet. In 2017 geriet die WHO wohl so unter Druck, dass sie das Programm beendet hat. Viviane hatte gefragt, wie sind Sie drauf gekommen, dass hier irgendwas schräg läuft? Ja, der Verdacht kam auf, weil es in Südamerika in 93 und 94 schon ähnliche Vorfälle gegeben hat. 95 wurde das dann auch in Kenia versucht. Aber damals hat sich die WHO geweigert, den Impfstoff testen zu lassen. Also Kenia wollte wissen, was da drin ist. Und weil die sich weigerten, mussten sie sich zurückziehen. Sie kamen aber 2013 zurück, plötzlich dann auch mit nicht nur einer Impfung in Anführungsstrichen, sondern mit mehreren Shots, alle 6 Monate, dann irgendwann alle 4 Monate. Das Merkwürdige, was da auffiel, war, dass diese sogenannten Impfungen ausschließlich für Frauen im gebärfähigen Alter, bis 49 Jahre nämlich, vorgesehen waren. Und da kam sofort die Frage, hat das auch was mit Fruchtbarkeitsregulierung in Anführungsstrichen zu tun? Da stellte sich dann raus, als getestet wurde, dass HCG da drin war, also dieses Schwangerschaftshormon, dass den Beweis, den man, ach so, ja, es hat jetzt eine Menge nicht erklärter Schwangerschaftsabbrüche gegeben oder Unfälle, die fast zu Schwangerschaftsabbrüchen geführt haben, auch zu echten Abbrüchen, Miscarriages. Und da stellt sich die entscheidende Frage, wenn die geimpften Frauen Antibodies, Antikörper gegen dieses HCG-Hormon haben, dann haben wir sie, sagt er. Dazu braucht man aber diese sogenannten ELISA-Test-Kits. Und die gibt es nicht im Land, die kann man da auch nicht produzieren. Es müsste also aus dem Ausland, müssten diese Testkits besorgt werden. Vielleicht können ja unsere Zuseher das dabei behilflich sein. Vielleicht gibt es da Quellen, über die man das machen könnte. Im nächsten Schritt würde das also dieser Beweis also gelingen, dass die geimpften Frauen diese Antibodies gegen HCG haben, könnte man natürlich dann auch den Fall, den Rechtsfall draus machen. Und ich hatte gesagt, da kennen wir genügend Anwälte, insbesondere auch angloamerikanische Anwälte, die bekannt dafür sind, hart zuzuschlagen, die dann auf die WHO und Gavi und so weiter losgehen würden. Aber zunächst mal braucht man den Fall und den Fall kriegt man nicht ohne die Testkits. Ja.
Okay.
And with respect to the order that all the public servants must be vaccinated by the end of this month. How does the population react to this? Do they have enough information to understand that these are, again, not vaccines, but rather shots of, an experimental character, because this is an experimental gene therapy? Or are people aware there's something wrong? Do they have an idea that they should be very careful? Or have they been persuaded that this is a good thing?
No, we have a lot of hesitancy. Of course, like any other country, we would have two groups. There are those who are really willing to go and get their vaccines. They have submitted to fear. And then there are those who basically understand that these are experimental vaccines and people have to be very careful. The main thing is that those of us who understand the risks don't have a very big voice. And this one time, the media is completely giving us a blackout. When we released our statement as Catholic doctors in March of this year, we were very clear that vaccination against COVID-19 is unnecessary, simply for the fact that there is treatment available. And we thought there would be a lot of media interest because they kind of love controversy. This time it didn't happen. They never came after us, except for one little clip that they did to play us against the bishops to demonstrate that like we are not together. But there's been very little. So we've been relying on social media and the few clips we put on YouTube were brought down within 10 minutes. We got, I think, one on Vimeo, and a few friends managed to get us some on Rumble. But it's been very slow and frustrating because it's you know, we don't have the kind of reach we need to get people to understand. Our hope really was that if majority of the people could understand the treatment protocols and have them available, which we have done as much as we could, it would be possible for these numbers of infections to drop on their own, and within a month or two, it would be possible to clearly demonstrate that the lockdowns and other things are no longer necessary. So it's a bit frustrating to have the truth and not be able to get it out there as quickly as possible, but we are doing what we can.
It's the only way.
Yeah.
We through the hearings that we have had in our Corona Committee, I mean, we've interviewed people like Dr. Mike Yeadon, who's a former vice president of Pfizer, Professor Luc Montagnier, who is a Nobel Prize winner specializing in HIV. All of them, including Dr. Vodak, who is with us right now, and others, all of them, without any exception, warned us about the shots because they are experimental gene therapies. But we have also learned that, in essence, we really don't have a pandemic, but rather this is a plandemic because this has been long planned. The only reason why people were, why the other side, as I call them, were capable of putting people into a mode of panic so that they would ultimately, after first agreeing to the masks and then to the lockdowns, ultimately agree to the shots, is the PCR test, which, as we all know in the meantime, cannot tell you anything about infections. Is that a matter of discussion in Kenya?
Maybe I'll share the statement we released in March, because it contains most of that information, we made those things very clear. And even now in our treatment protocols, we are telling people that you don't need to treat if you don't need to do any test if you don't have symptoms. It doesn't make sense. And if you have symptoms, the cost of the test here in Kenya is more expensive than the treatment that you would take for the disease. So again, you can weigh your options. Because doing the test then is really just collecting statistics. But if you can't afford the test, then it's cheaper to take the treatment. And then it is now clear that people are developing immunity after getting infected, which is a very good thing. Initially, they were denying that fact. And then if you do the test and it's negative and you have symptoms, you still have to take the medicine because it could be up to 30% a false negative. So again, for us, the PCR test is neither here nor there. We are relying on clinical assessment.
Okay. So it'll be very important to see what will happen towards the end of the month. Will the public servants really comply? Or as is happening, for example, in France, will they rather, quit their jobs? Many people in France, for example, have understood that this is not a decision between a job and a vaccination, but it is a life and death decision.
Well, here, I think what we'll have more of is ignoring the advisory, the instruction by government, because it is not possible to sustain that legally. The lawyers I've spoken to have told me it doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. And the civil servants who will not agree to get the vaccine are supposedly going to be taken through some disciplinary action. When you look at the code of conduct, we still can't find what it is they'll be charged with. So it's really a lot of hot air. We'll release a statement about it. We'll do what we can to try and educate the civil servants. There are a few lawyers who are looking to see whether they can challenge the instruction in court. It's a bit slow on that end, but for us, we'll be able to release a little update on what the civil servants should consider as their option. As far as I'm concerned, they should ignore that instruction and wait for disciplinary action. There is no need of resigning. At the point at which their jobs are terminated, then we'll have a legal position to go and challenge those in court. So that's the way I would look at it.
Sounds like a smart course of action to me. Mm. Okay, I'll translate that. Also es gibt in Kenia eine Menge Zurückhaltung wegen dieser Impfung. Viele Menschen verstehen zwar nicht ganz genau, was los ist, aber die es verstehen, die es nicht verstehen, die haben trotzdem eine Zurückhaltung. Wahrscheinlich ist das dieses angeborene oder das instinktive Misstrauen, von dem wir vorhin schon mal gehört haben. Aber die es verstehen und die genau durchschauen durch das ganze Problem, haben eine viel zu leise Stimme, denn in den Medien werden sie schlichtweg ignoriert. Man muss also auf die sozialen Medien ausweichen, genauso wie bei uns. Aber auch da wird man beispielsweise auf YouTube innerhalb von 10 Minuten gelöscht, wenn man mit solchen kritischen Stimmen kommt. Die PCR-Test-Problematik ist dort auch bekannt. In einem Statement aus dem März, ich nehme an 2020, ist das auch schon benannt worden. Es macht überhaupt keinen Sinn, PCR-Tests an Symptomlosen durchzuführen, sagt auch Dr. Ngare. Und im Übrigen sind die Kosten dieser Tests viel höher als die Kosten der alternativen Behandlungsmöglichkeiten, die es ja alles gibt. Wenn jetzt aber zum Ende des Monats August alle öffentlichen Bediensteten alle Beamten geimpft sein sollen, da habe ich gefragt, was passiert dann? Kündigen die, wie das beispielsweise in einem Krankenhaus in Frankreich passiert ist, wo, ich weiß nicht, 150 Ärzte und 200 weitere Menschen aus dem Gesundheitspersonal einfach nicht mehr mitgemacht haben wegen der Impfung? Nee, sagt er, die meisten Leute werden einfach diese Anweisungen der Regierung ignorieren. Die Anwälte sagen auch, dass es sowieso alles von vorne bis hinten keinen Sinn macht. Es wird also wahrscheinlich so gespielt werden, dass man tatsächlich diesen Empfehlungen der Anwälte folgt und sagt, wir ignorieren das alles und warten mal, bis sie mit irgendwelchen Disziplinarmaßnahmen kommen. Denn auch das haben die Anwälte gesagt, womit wollen wir die denn überhaupt belangen? Weil sie sich nicht in ihrer körperlichen Integrität verletzen lassen wollen. Da sind wir mal sehr gespannt. Good. Well, that was a very interesting view of what's going on in Kenya. We've spoken to some others, South Africans, for example, about their situation in their countries. The South Africans, we helped them with some of our lawyers and some of our experts to put together a complaint. We had been hoping that this would be filed a couple of weeks ago, but for some reason, something is slowing them down. But they will file this complaint, they assured us, probably in the first week of September. And that usually, they explained this to us, usually has an effect on other African states as well. If their highest court, their Supreme Court, finds that there is no pandemic, but only a PCR test pandemic, then other courts in other African countries might follow suit. He was at least optimistic about that.
Well, maybe if you share some of those, I could also give them to some of our sympathetic lawyers and see what they think about something similar. But if you have any material, legal material that can be used to go to court against mandatory vaccination for experimental vaccines or shots, I'd be very happy to have that, to share it with our colleagues in law.
I will do that.
Yes,
I will connect you with the South African colleagues and doctors, and I will send you the, we have draft complaints, we have expert opinions, you can, and some of this is in English, others we will have to translate, but I think this will be pretty valuable. You don't have to reinvent the wheel, so to speak.
Exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, now I had a few thoughts about this COVID thing and maybe some strategies I was thinking I could share with your team. I don't know how much time we have.
But Rainer, we should do this in this, maybe like a second or like an individual conversation, maybe like an ad hoc or so, because we, you know, we now have to talk to Herrn Burka and then we are limited time-wise, like, you know, after him.
So how about, Dr. Ngari, how about if we arrange for another, we call this ad hoc interview, in which only Viviane and myself and Dr. Hoffmann and Antonia Fischer we'll talk to you, and we will then show this to the audience. But it's separate from our regular sessions. However, they have the same audience. If that is okay, I think that would, under the circumstances, make the most sense. But in the meantime, I'll connect you with the South Africans, and I will provide you with the materials that we have.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'd really like that.